This is my mum, and the kids getting excited. Jethro is only interested in his drink, of course, but everyone else is enjoying the train. And here the kids are gold panning on the trip. Now, Jethro was one of the few people to actually find a speck of gold, which made him ridiculously excited. And he spent the next 3 hours going and telling everyone on the train and showing them his little speck of gold. And ever since then, he's been gold mining every time he sees any piece of land with water. Naomi, she's dancing on the Gordon Franklin River, being gorgeous as usual. It's a beautiful place to dance, isn't it? And this is my sister, photobombing Jackie Lambie at the Strawn Flower pub, which she thought was fantastic, given that she's not a Lambie voter. And this is Caleb on a very steep sand dune in Strawn with a sign that says "Don't go on sand dunes." So we had a whole lot of fun. So I suppose it's been an excellent refreshing break and one that I definitely needed. It's funny though, at the same time I felt that at the end of last year, I felt personally in a bit of a storm, and I've talked about that with a few of you, but I felt there are some things in my personal life, my work life, that have been a bit disappointing, and to be honest, I felt like I was a small boat on a stormy sea, and I certainly needed a refreshing and restful holiday. But even during that time, I felt that God was preparing me and revealing things to me, and giving me space and time to question and reflect and ask what next, God, and where to here, and how do you want to work in the things that I was struggling with. And it's interesting because I suppose when I've reflected on it, God's done some great things in me, helping me through some disappointments and some hurts. But at the same time, I feel like there has been or is a storm in many of our lives, and I wanted to at least share some stories about that. Obviously talk about this year and talk about what this year might look like. It's really fantastic. I suppose in terms of the storm, it might be, for me it was a bit of a storm of stress and busyness and feeling overwhelmed and overworked, and I certainly know that there are a number of people here who have that sense of storm in their lives. For others it was anxiety and fear, a sense of worry for the things of the world and the things around us. For others, relational conflict and heartache and broken relationships, really painful and difficult, and a physical illness storm, either for yourself, but also for other people who you know, people who you've got a heart for, and who we feel connected with and empathy for, who we love, and whose lives are broken. And I suppose, as well as that spiritual attack, in many ways, for some of us, as we pioneer new things and step out in disciple making and step out in leadership. So, all of that together, in some ways, has felt very much like a storm, particularly towards the end of last year. And I suppose I wanted to reflect on that and acknowledge that, but also be thankful for the time of abiding in God that I've had and I know that we have had. And I'm looking forward to what will be next. And during that time, the Spirit really spoke to me, and I'd like to share some of that stuff and also share what that looks like in the coming season. So let's start with some scripture. This is a beloved scripture from the Gospel of Matthew about Jesus calming the storm. Then Jesus got into the boat, and his disciples followed him. Suddenly, a furious storm came up on the lake, so that the waves swept over the boat. But Jesus was sleeping. The disciples went and woke him, saying, "Lord, save us! We're going to drown!" He replied, "You of little faith, why are you so afraid?" Then he got up and rebuked the wind and the waves, and was completely calm. The men were amazed and asked, "What kind of man is this? Even the winds and the waves obey him." It's a simple but beautiful story. We've heard it many times before, but I'd just like to share a few insights or reflections I've had about this. Now, one, I love the contrast. I mean, you have Jesus and the disciples, and they're in a boat, and there's this crazy storm. The waves are hitting, and the wind is going, and the water's going over it. And in those days, the boats weren't like the boats today, they sank. And they crashed and people drowned on a regular basis. And there was a fear of the wind gods and the sea gods. And people all knew stories of people, fishermen, who died at sea, and they knew people. But so there was real reason to fear. There's such a contrast between a furious storm and Jesus sleeping, and the wind and the waves going everywhere, and yet there's peace and there's calm. And I love those two contrasting things, and it's certainly something I've been reflecting on over the last few months. And so Jesus is woken by his fearful, terrified disciples, his friends, and then he does something incredible. He basically says, shh, everything is still. It's still in the dark. It's still in the middle of the ocean, but everything is still with one word from Jesus. And it's incredible. And they say, what kind of man is this? Even the winds and the waves obey him. And one of the things I've reflected on was a story I heard Michael Frost give many, many years ago, well before he was in Forge, before I met him through that training. And he told a story, and he said, look, imagine that Peter grows up, and he's an old man, and he's got all these grandchildren around him, and he's sitting there, and maybe his youngest grandchild, maybe 3 or 4 year old Tabitha, sits on his knee and says, oh, Gramps, Peter, tell us a story. Is there anything interesting that's happened in your life? And Peter would stop and he'd say, well, do I have a story for you? Many years ago, when I was a young man, when I was still fishing, I met a man called Jesus. And he was the Son of God. I mean, he is the creator of the universe, the one who made all things. He was omnipotent. He did miracles. He walked the earth. He had wisdom. God himself, who made everything, came to earth as a baby and then a man and actually walked alongside of me in the person of Jesus. He was the Messiah. He was the King. He was the one to rescue Israel and to fulfill all the prophecies. God came into history and broke in. And I knew this man. In fact, not only did I know him, he was my best friend and I was his best friend. And little Tabitha goes, that is amazing. What happened to him? He died in a boating accident. It's hilarious, isn't it, when you think about it? You've got the creator of the universe in a boat. And they woke him up because they were terrified that they were going to die in a boating accident. If you think about it, it's quite illogical. And when you recognize it, it's the sin of the disciples, not the sin, but the stuff up of the disciples wasn't that they woke Jesus up when the storm was there, and it wasn't that they were scared of the storm, it was that they forgot who he was. They forgot who was in the boat with him. What kind of man is this? Well, it's the Son of God who gets in the boat. It doesn't matter if the storm's big. Does that make sense? It's a beautiful image. And when I reflect on feeling like I'm a small boat in a big storm, and maybe we are at times, I suppose it reminds me that we are not going to drown and we will be safe because Jesus is with us. And we just have to not forget who he is, what type of man he is. Another story very briefly that reminds me of a few passages later, Jesus is walking on water in a storm and the disciples are on a boat and Peter says, Jesus, if that's you, can I do what you're doing? And he says, sure, come on in. And so Peter steps out of the boat, which is exactly the song we sing about. The story we sing about in the song Oceans, which we've just talked about. And so Peter, he steps on the waters. He steps out of the boat and he walks on the water, and it's incredible. But then he looks around and he gets fearful of the wind and the waves, he gets fearful of the storm, and he takes his eyes off Jesus and he starts to sink and he cries out, Jesus, rescue me. And it's extraordinary because Jesus basically rescues Peter and says, you're a good faith. But it's the same lesson. Now it's interesting, we often kind of get down on Peter because he took his eyes off Jesus and he started to think he needed Jesus to rescue him. But the irony is, well, the thing that I think is amazing is, look, Peter was walking on water. Like he was actually walking on water. You don't get an Olympian who can walk on water. None of us can walk on water. The only way Peter did this miracle is because he was doing it in God's strength in the first place. And yes, he sank. And yes, Jesus needed to come rescue him, but wow, he actually was a man who walked on water and defied the elements. And that is pretty damn amazing. And so some of my reflections have been that, yes, he sank, but he sank doing something extraordinary, and he sank doing something remarkable. And I would rather sink trying to do something incredible than to stay in the boat and to play it safe and to have a small vision and to find it easy. You know what I mean? And if we keep our eyes fixed on Jesus and remember who is in the boat with us, remember who the Son of Man is, then we will be able to do even greater things. But we do need to trust in Him. So that's some of the stuff I've been reflecting on. I love this picture. Eventually the storm stops and the boat falls. So I've called this talk Walking on Water, and I want to talk about the hopes and dreams for 2018 and get practical, and then obviously have the time to discuss what this year will look like together. So to start with, I want to start by reminding us of the vision that God's given us and some of the things that He's said along the way over the last few years, and then I'd like to talk practically about what the year looks like and then what we'll do about it. So firstly, our vision. A number of years ago, He gave us this vision to bless and renew the suburbs of Hobart by building an extended family of disciples who make disciples, leaders who train leaders, and communities who birth communities. And to highlight a few of the words, to bless and renew the suburbs of Hobart. This is a kingdom vision. It's not about church, it's actually about the kingdom. It's about blessing and renewing culture. It's about transforming people's lives and having a bigger vision than ourselves. Disciples who make disciples, so apprentices or learners of Jesus who make more learners, who are faithful in following Jesus and put discipleship at the centre of all they do. Our leaders who train leaders, so we are longing to be a leadership people, a people where leadership, we are called and individuals are called to our leadership vision and then they train others. So there's this constant paying it forward and again, missional communities or oikos we call them, who birth other oikos. And it's that vision that we believe God's given us that allows us to eventually make a real impact wherever we are. We'd love to see a missional community in every suburb of Hobart. And it's not impossible, but it is impossible in our strength. It's absolutely impossible without God. So just a reminder of a few principles behind that. I won't go a lot into this, but the first one is multiplication. The vision is based on the principle of multiplication, which is completely different than the idea of addition. Most thinking in the West is based on addition, but God thinks about multiplication. So this image is, reminds us of the story of the Indian prince and the wise man who came and was offered a gift by the prince, or the Indian prince. And the prince said, yes, what would you like? And the wise man said, it's a very simple gift. See this chessboard? I would simply like one grain of wheat placed on the first square. And then the second day, I would like you to put two grains of wheat. And on the third day, four. And I just want you to double it every time for 64 squares, and then my debt will be paid. And the king or the prince thought that seems quite reasonable. I mean, look how small that is. One, two, four. He didn't know how much wheat that was, but it couldn't have been that much. So he granted the wish. But little did he know that two becomes four, which becomes eight, which becomes 16, which becomes 32, which becomes 64. And once you get to multiply by the power of 16, it starts to become ridiculous. There were bags and bags and bags and bags of wheat. Now, by the time the mathematicians saw this, they started to calculate the amount of wheat that would be needed, and it was more wheat than had ever been produced in all the world. In fact, if you got the amount of wheat that would be multiplied to the 64th time, it would cover all of the land of India, I think half a meter thick. Completely impossible. That's the power of multiplication, and we need to remember that we are a kingdom. If you look, and this is not just theory, I mean, everything in the New Testament multiplies. Bread multiplies, fish multiplies, disciples multiply, life multiplies. And there's plenty of scriptures which I've talked about in the past. Just a super quick recap. So the Roman Empire was a pagan nation, and Christianity was a tiny backwater religion, which was a persecuted minority in a persecuted minority religion, which was the Jewish faith. And what you see is basically nothing happened, but somehow, at about 400 AD, sociologists and historians say that nearly 40 to 50% of the entire Roman Empire were Christian, and it almost happened overnight, and no one knew how it happened. So the remarkable thing is when you track the statistics of what actually happened, for the first decade there was 40% growth, the next 40% growth, then 40% growth, and 40% growth. But the thing is, 40% growth of one grain looks like hardly anything, doesn't it? Or two grains or three grains, but if you keep doing that, boom, you hit the inflection point and the world changes. We see this again in India, we see it in China, we see it in the Middle East amongst Muslim people right now. 1998, this is a stat from City Church, City Team, one of the multiplying movements you see in India, exactly the same stats. Starts extremely small, but if you multiply, eventually you hit this inflection point. But the beginning looks like absolutely nothing. And again, our vision is just a hypothetical example, but if each missional community multiplied once every 3 or 4 years, then again, it looks like nothing. But if you give it a few generations, my goodness, you can change the world. So I suppose our hope is that the thing about multiplication is it's a very different ethic, and very different ethos, and very different practices and tradition. If you want to add, you get a building, you fill it, and you mark it. But it doesn't multiply. To create the DNA of multiplying disciples, who made disciples, leaders. It's slower and harder and more invisible, but I believe it's our kingdom vision. Okay, so that's the first principle. And again, the fourth generation thing is important. Personal preference. Multiplication beats personal preference. That's one of the principles. So we're all individuals in the West, but the thing about multiplication is we need to be able to make it so that what I teach, Ant and Aim and Kylie and Hannah, gets multiplied in the same way for the next huddle. And others, and that gets multiplied the same way. By the time you get the fourth generation, then you know you have something reproducible, and it usually gets to the 16th in the spirit of God. Okay, so that's the first thing in multiplication. I'll move on faster from here. The second one is the Red Hot Centers. So in November 2016 at the 3DM Learning Community, a number of us spent a weekend praying and discerning what is God saying to us. We were at the stage, if you remember, that our house was pretty full, and we had momentum and energy, and we thought something has to happen because we just don't want to stay like this. And God made it really clear that He wanted us to create two red hot centers. One being missional communities, which I represented as the small ticker, and the other, and disciple making happening in that, and the other being a vehicle of some type of temple space or public gathering or service. And we knew at the time that seemed like a huge stretch for us. Little did I know it wasn't even the biggest stretch than I expected. But we really believed that God was saying, if we want to see multiplication happen, then we need to be able to create two very different ideas and different structures in order to fulfill the vision. So a temple space is about the whole community getting together, the network. It's about public worship, which is different than in a house. It's about a visibility to the community so that new people can be welcomed. It's about proclamation of the gospel. It's about setting culture and language. Refreshing ourselves as a community, and also about network unity. The oikos, or the missional communities, is about family, extended family, deep community. It's about mission and knowing our neighbours and having a homely place and space. It's about mission on the margins. It's about intimate and accountable disciple making. We need both, but they're really hard. And I suppose the last image I'd like to share is one that I felt very much God was saying to me last year, that I was an African American rapper. It's the best picture I could find, but the image was that we're wearing clothes that were way, way too big for us. Because the idea of doing this when we're so small is almost impossible. Sorry? We're wearing clothes that are too big for us, and we knew it. We always knew it. I didn't realise how hard it would be. But it certainly has stretched us, and I think part of the momentum loss last year towards the end was that we felt stretched. But at the same time, when we've been praying and reflecting over this season, we still feel like God is saying the same vision. Trust me. Step out of the boat. Keep your eyes on me. And I will lead you somewhere remarkable. What I believe God's saying. It doesn't mean we don't have to tweak it and change it. We are going to make some shifts. And I'll talk about that, but I do believe that essentially the things God said to us are still what God said to us. So in terms of the storm, I believe for us as a community, the storm is our size. And we have a big vision, a big sea. We have a small size, and it's very hard to resource it. I don't want us to feel stretched and exhausted, and yet we also want to be faithful to the things that God has put on our heart. And I believe that this storm may have lasted a little bit longer, but I also believe it's a testing time for us so that we can really use our life in Jesus. We are too small to run a red hot temple space. Let's keep our eyes on Jesus. Let's trust him. Let's walk out on the boat. Now, practically, I'd love to share some thoughts for this coming year that I feel God's been speaking to me over the last few months. So firstly, course correction. You know, Ant and I particularly, but also the board have discussed this, and I've discussed this with those leading the missional communities. We've had lots of conversations, and the conversations earlier in the year, well, earlier in the year and around December were, wow, do we need to do a whole, do we need to do a 180 turn? I was going to say 360, but that wouldn't quite work. Are we going to do a 180 turn? Do we need to do a U-turn and return to something radically different than what we're doing? And we thought of these radically different ideas, stopping this and partnering with other churches, and we've thrown up lots of different ideas. But I keep coming to this back to this idea of course correction, that when you want to push against the wind, actually the way a sailboat moves is attacks, and it just adjusts its course. And those minor course adjustments are all we need to be able to go where God wants to go. And I believe that for us, God's calling us to some minor course corrections, and particularly around having a bit more discussion, more of a community focus, so there's a bit more of a sense of togetherness, a bit more of a friendly family type feel. I think we may have overstretched the service type thing, and it didn't quite fit us, not only the clothes but the style just didn't quite feel right, and something which is as lightweight and low maintenance as possible in order to fit where we're at as God leads us forward. So there are some tweaks, but I think it's more like this tacking against the wind. And the last thing before I share what I think the year will look like, just a recap of the goals that we came up with as a leadership team or as a group in November last year, which I did share with everyone briefly, but I suppose I've looked at these again and I realised that nothing's actually changed, that the things we felt God saying is still what we need to do, but maybe how we do those things is a bit simpler. So to grow the service, so it becomes something that we love, we felt that the space here didn't quite fit us, and we wrestled with, do we go somewhere else, or do we try to make it a bit more homely? So I suppose we've come back to the idea of we can improve the atmosphere and make it feel a bit more cozy, and that would actually fit us better. And thank you so much for Kaz and Alice, Nick, Dylan, helping with these petitions. I think this is a nicer space. Please give us your feedback. But we're hoping we can create something that feels a bit more like us. And similarly, we'll have more of a discussion-based group, which we'll talk about later. Growing the service, so we feel like, yes, we still need to position ourselves to grow the service, but I don't believe it will be this year. We still need to do the stuff like the website, which is necessary for others to join us, because the website is like English to our culture. If you don't speak the language, you can't invite people to join. So we're going to do some of that stuff this year, but I believe that it's setting up for growth rather than really feeling like God's going to do something amazing this year. But who knows what he'll do. But I feel like the measure of growth for this year is more that we are connecting and that we are following Jesus and that we are full of life and spirit, rather than that we get lost in numbers. But we also need to do the things in the background, like a name shift and a website and videos and stuff that will allow us to then promo who we are in the coming year. The Oikos spaces, so the missional community spaces, we believe that God is saying we need to have intentional spaces where we can share the gospel more specifically, which is hard to do in some of the rhythms and spaces that we have now. And so the stones I'll talk about, that we believe God wants us to start a house church, which is a focus on the kids and people in the neighbourhood, and the Risenbell Mission Community are praying and discerning right now what that might look like for them. And again, kids discipleship, we're rethinking it. Kaz can talk about some of that, and Hannah can talk about some of that, but particularly to simplify the program and to look at one-on-one mentoring older kids instead of huddle. And focus for teaching will be evangelism. We have Steve Addison, who I've been chatting with online, and he's been coaching me a bit, and I really, really believe that the training will be valuable and helpful and really worth going to. So I'm really encouraged to enter that. Just staff containers, very briefly. So I'm going up half day a week. So the board's had a discussion about my role, and I feel like I need to be in the office twice a week. I've been too stretched. Alice's role has changed, so she's doing an apprenticeship with Agape, and so that's, she's dropping the 1.5 days a week to do that. Kylie has been employed, to do the worship and also to run a number of huddles. So Kai and I lead a leadership huddle, but she'll also be leading a new huddle with people and also helping with some of the Holy Spirit training and teaching stuff. And Ant is continuing stable as usual, no change, and Kaz is supporting with some administration and project work in her role with the board. She's supporting with the kids care type project stuff as a volunteer, so we're really grateful for all of that. Okay, I'm sorry if that was a lot of information, but I felt like it's been a long time and we've had different conversations with different individuals, but it's good to get on the same page with where we're at and what's happening. What I believe this year will look like, after lots of conversations with people, week one. So week one and week three will be here. Week two and week four, we're proposing to open up missional communities to invite others to get involved so that there's something every week and it creates a sense of momentum and community. So week one, the TBC network gathering and meal. So basically that's this. Once a month we'll do this. And this is more energy and it's more effort, but I do feel like it's important to have this space and on Friday to worship, to teach and to commune together. And we'll eat together. Kids do some type of discovery Bible study type teaching. Kathy can talk about that. But that should be fairly lightweight in my main notes. I might go to week three. So week three is also in this building. But we're not going to put up anything here. We're simply going to sit over at the tables and chairs over there. And there won't be a meal, but what we will do is pull out a whiteboard, pull out a guitar, definitely a whiteboard, and the guitar, or there'll be some non-musical worship. We'll worship God. There'll be a short 10-minute training about stuff to do, particularly with discipleship or witnessing or sharing your faith. And then the rest of the time we'll chat about it and we'll practice it and we'll hear each other's stories. So it'll be a lot more relational, a lot less service-like, and we'll have tea and coffee as we do it. And snacks. Cheese platters. Yeah. Cheese platters, snacks, caviar, beverages, you name it. Okay, but then you have to go home and make dinner. We get a lot of cheese. So but I think what that will do is that reduces the amount of time and prep. I suggest even for, let's say, a sermon prep, it will massively shrink down. We're probably looking about half an hour to an hour of prep rather than what's needed for sermon. There's no setup because the setting up of the music will be simpler. So I think that'll make it simpler, but we'll still be able to meet the community and actually get stuff that we've missed, which is more dialogue, more conversation, and actually practical training. Week two and week four are where we open up the missional community spaces to those obviously in the communities, but those who aren't in a missional community, we'd love you to be involved in some stuff and to build a sense of community and belonging, and also for anyone else who might join eventually, that there's a place where they can get a taste of community life and get a feel for what that is. So the Stones will be opening up a house church, that'll be in our houses, but it will look and feel different than it used to, because in the past it was predominantly for us, whereas this is a missional space, so it's predominantly to disciple our kids and those who are in our neighbourhood, many of whom are Christians or who are very, very loosely Christian. So it will have a lot less spiritual content, it will be all in, so kids and adults will be in together, and it will just be simple and community-based. It will be short and sharp as well. But we'd love you to get involved in that if you'd like to come and join us in our mission and to support with that. And Risen Vale and the missional community are praying about what that space might look like for them. Week four, so Stones do we already have a rhythm where we have a fire pit. Choir, unless it's fire band season, and it's for our neighbours in our community. Now we're not quite sure, we're still discerning what that looks like as a missional community to invite others into that space, because there's a real mix of people from the housing department, from the units, from our neighbourhood, our families, and so it is a place where it matters what it looks like, but we're still discerning and praying what that looks like. But if you'd like to be involved and support with that mission, we'd love you to have a chat with us, and similarly we'll let you know as soon as they know what they're doing with that space as well. But the aim or the intention is that it's not just this once a fortnight gathering that we have where we meet, but there's opportunities to be part of the community in a new missed some of, I think, what we missed, to regain some of what we missed last year, to both strengthen the mission of the communities, but also to encourage anyone to get involved. I think that'll be good. And then obviously in the background we have new huddles starting, and there will also be discovery Bible study groups, particularly after this, because Steve Addison's encouragement is to get us to practice with one or two people to do the things that he teaches us to do. So there'll be more opportunities for everyone if you want to, I believe, to be involved in more accountable one-on-one or one-to-two person discipleship. So I think it's just a better mix than what we had last year, a course correction, I believe, in the right direction. And we're going to have a discussion, but the very last point I'd like to say before we open up for conversation is, as much as we've given lots of prayer and thought, and there's been a lot of conversations and back and forth about that structure, it's not about the structure. At the end of the day, it's about Jesus. And it's about keeping our eyes on him. He is calling us to walk on water, which is impossible. And there is a storm. It's not easy. It's actually a really hard vision to step into with the size that we have right now. Just simple, practical numbers. But at the same time, the structure is important. And we want to get it right. But the point is that we need to all look to Jesus. Remember and trust in him and know that he is with us in the storm. And not to forget that the Son of God is in the boat with us and he ain't going to die in a fishing accident. Okay? So, we'll have a minute of silence and just reflect on the information I've given you. And then, I'd love us to talk particularly about what you think about the discipleship training and the network gatherings as a tweak in the rhythm. What do you think about the stones and are they opening?